When did you first pick up the accordion?
I was in second grade, or first, or I believe second grade. Our cousins loaned me a little 12-bass accordion, and the school teacher, we were all in a one-room schoolhouse, Brushy was the name of the school, and she taught accordion. So I did take lessons for about 2 years, but I began to pick it up by ear, and I didn't want to practice the notes. And so at that point, I start playing along with some of the old-time music that I had heard since I was a child, and start playing and picking it out. And so that was the extent of my formal training. It was about 2 years.
When you were like playing and picking out the notes from the songs, were these other classical songs that you'd heard on the accordion, or were they like piano songs or?
Well, mostly dance music is what kind of specified it. We had a neighbor who played accordion and would play for dances, and I grew up listening to that. From the time we were old enough to walk, our parents took us along. It was a family event. We all went to the dance, and if you didn't dance, you slid on the floor and slept on the bench. But that was always a family event. We'd gather and go on Saturday nights. We'd find the local dance within a 30-mile radius, and the whole family would go. So I kind of grew up with it, and so the songs were familiar to me. So that's how it all began, I guess. And as I progressed and listened and played, and when I started high school, or a little before even, we had a repertoire large enough. My cousin played piano and a neighbor girl played drums. We decided to form a little dance band. And so we played for the next 4 or 5 years, every Saturday night. And I'm not sure if it was because we were cheap or good. They could hire us for $60. And that was all three of us, and that was it. So each of us made $20 a piece. If we had to pay for expenses, we probably wouldn't have been able to even do it, because our parents would drive us, and we'd play in old schoolhouses and community dance halls and VFWs, and our parents had to go along because none of us were 18 yet. And so that was kind of interesting. We enjoyed it and had a great time doing it, but as things progressed, we all went separate ways as we went off to college, and so there was little or no time left. We tried, and even in college, the first year or so, we all played or came back and would play for these particular gigs, but it got to the point where it was just getting too difficult to get together. So that's kind of what happened. And the same with the Hazuka family, who I met in winter. Like I said, I turned them down the first time they asked if I'd play with them. They were playing for a dance in my parish hall. I was the pastor at Immaculate Conception Parish in Winter, South Dakota. And as a bohemian community, this particular family band played a lot of bohemian music, which I was just getting exposed to. But I began to pick up on it, and they knew a lot of the same pieces of music that I knew, because they played dance music, old-time dance music. And as I said, I turned them down the first time, and the second time they played about a month later in my hall, and they said, "We heard you played an accordion, you have no excuse. We brought an accordion along." And I sat down with them and played a set, and it was like we had played together for, like I'd been part of the band all along. So consequently, we started playing, and they kept inviting me to come meet with them at wherever they were playing in the local area, and that lasted about 23 years. And again, we were all transferred or moved to different parts of the country, and it got to the point where it was just too far to drive, you know. One of us ended up having to drive 400 miles, but there was Roger Hazuka and his dad Roy and his son Brad. So it was fun while it lasted, and it lasted quite a while. We got to play, we were invited, and we played in the Viking Hall for 17 years in a row.
Where's that?
Here in Rapid City, Canyon Lake Senior Citizen Center, the Viking Hall. And then we played Deadwood, the Four Aces, for I think 8 years in a row. They'd have a Oktoberfest and then a spring fling, and we played there for 7 or 8 years. But again, the distance just became prohibitive. somebody had to drive. If I didn't drive back to Huron, that's where Roger lived then. His dad lived in Winter and his son lived in Sioux Falls. Well, the distance became too great. Just so we decided it was probably time to let it go.
Do any out of all of these shows that you guys performed over 23 years?
Dances.
What one stands out the most? What was the best performance you guys ever had together?
I don't know if we really weren't a stage band in the sense that we performed as a show for dinner or theater or anything like that. It was always focused on dance music, good dance music that people could either waltz or do a country swing or a polka or a two-step. Was the primary focus, and I think probably some of the times that I enjoyed most were playing at the Four Aces in Deadwood. It was a nice setting, and they had a good floor, and there was a great number of people that came. The place was always full, and there was usually two bands playing, so we'd play an hour, and then the other band would take over immediately and play following them. So it was kind of intense because it would be about 8 hours of polka music a day and go into the evening. But we'd do that for 2 to 3 days, usually Friday through Sunday. And I think I enjoyed them probably the most. Got to know a lot of people, and especially people who would follow, polka bands or music like we played. You know, you got to get to know some new people and new faces, and they kept coming. So yeah, I did enjoy that a lot. I really did.
These people who show up, what's a crowd at a polka dance like? So you said they're doing a lot of different styles of dancing.
Yeah.
Do they get rowdy? Is it like being in a rock concert? Is it like being at the beer tent when you go to the Central States Fair?
I would say it's probably neither one of them. I kind of smile and laugh, but most often, you know, they aren't rowdy. They're there to have a good time, and most of them are pretty serious about dancing. You know, some of them bring their dance shoes. You can buy regular dance shoes that slide smoothly on a hardwood floor. But we always kind of smile and say, yeah, a lot of blue hair and a lot of gray hair. You know, the people are usually older, but they recall that type of music. And so it wouldn't be like a rock concert. It isn't, they don't yell and scream. And at the same time, they wouldn't necessarily be those who just sit around. They love to dance, and they seek that out and would drive miles. I remember a couple from over by south of Stoneville, I think, or out by Howe's Corner, and they were Cabin Heifers. It was the Spring Fling. And they would drive, I'm sure it was close to 100 miles from where they lived, to come and dance for two, three hours, and then they'd have to get home because they had heifers they were watching. And so you just develop good friendships with just kind of wholesome people, which I really did enjoy and have enjoyed. And still do, I guess.
Yeah. So can you tell me a little bit more about these polka sermons that you did for a little while, too?
Polka masses?
Polka masses, yeah. Yes. Are those in the church, or?
Yes, yeah. They were real popular in the mid or early 80s. I happened to be in school in Denver at the time as a seminarian, and we did a few there, but true liturgists, aren't too keen on them. But they're an ethnic mass, just like a mariachi mass for the Hispanic people would be. It was usually religious words put to, say, traditional polka music of one form or another. Father Frank Perkovich had started that in 1974 or 73, somewhere in there, in Eveleth, Minnesota. And so I listened to it, and I decided to develop some of my own, and I used some of what he had used and developed a mass where you'd sing the parts of the mass, but you'd also sing songs, but it was done in 4-4 time, either 3-4 time, which would be waltz time, or in 4/4 time, which would be polka. So it was very uplifting and upbeat, and people seemed to enjoy them. They were real popular in winter. The Czech people, of course, loved it, and I wouldn't want one every weekend, even as a pastor. But they were seemed to be quite appropriate and fit the mood for, say, 50th wedding anniversary masses where they'd renew their vows, that type of thing, whereas we would fill the church with Catholic as well as non-Catholic people that would come just because they wanted to hear the music. And then we'd have a choir, I would teach them the songs, and they would sing it. So I went to, you've heard of Czech Days down at Tyndall, probably. They run 3 days, but I did their polka mass at St. Wenceslas for, I think, 7 years in a row. They invited me to come down there and to lead and to do their polka mass with their Czech king and queen and junior king and junior queen. And then they'd even have the very youngest ones who were king and queens. Every year there was a new one, but they were very strong in their ethnicity and their music. And so I enjoyed doing that. We've been invited to the cathedral here in Rapid City, which we had done the polka mass there also. So I think the last one I did was here at St. Therese, the little flower, for Father Bill Zandri's 70th birthday. And like I said, it's kind of fitting. It's very uplifting, and it moves. It's polka time. So people that enjoy that kind of music to begin with, they come to that mass. We don't dance at a polka mass. People, you know, you can see their foot tapping, or they're keeping time with the music on the pew with their hand, whatever, but they seem to enjoy them. But liturgically, you know, within the Roman Catholic faith, it's really not part of our tradition to do a polka mass. But as I said, it's like any ethnic mass. It prescribes the music to a particular ethnic group, and then religious words were put to them. So
you kind of found a way, discovered a way in Denver during college to like mix theology and priesthood with
right.
polka music.
Exactly.
That's
exactly
awesome. So when you studied to be a pastor, right?
I did.
Can I hear a little bit about your college, like about your studies and how you got to where you are now?
Well, I looked at the possibility of priesthood, and I guess when we were at Captain Glenn's Fun Wagon, there's not many people that would ever remember that, but it was here in Rapid City, and our local grade school, with the same teacher that taught me those first years of accordion, every year they would, or every week they would host a different local school, and so we were able to go there. And I guess, as I recall, he had asked me what I wanted to be when I grew up, and I said a priest. And that was probably second grade. And then it kind of fell by the wayside, but a real inspiration of my life was Father Don Murray. He had baptized me and a number of my brothers and sisters, and he flew to our parish mission out at Drew, South Dakota, which is in the middle of nowhere, really, about 30 miles south of Bison, South Dakota. And I was enamored with his airplane. My father flew, and I loved flying. And so after we'd serve mass for him on Sunday, ranch families would invite him to their home for lunch. And he'd always fly, so I'd get to fly with him in his plane to our place. As time went on, I could see how he touched the lives of people and somehow made them better. And I thought, I wonder if I could do that. And I went to a boarding school in New England, North Dakota, a parochial, or a St. Mary's of New England, and boarded there for 4 years. And after I finished high school, I decided that, you know, that might be a real possibility for me. So I studied with the Benedictines in Assumption Abbey in Richardson, North Dakota, received my Associate of Arts degree, and then went on to Conception Seminary in another Benedictine-run school, finished my college degree, and then from there was sent to Denver to St. Thomas Theological Seminary for the last 4 years for my master's. So I was ordained in 1977 and have been a priest Well, in March it'll be 40 years.
You kind of mentioned that you travel like back and forth to different areas in South Dakota.
Yes.
Can you tell me a little bit about that, where you go, how you got here?
Well, we take a promise of obedience and a vow of celibacy, and so you normally you're sent by your bishop to a particular locale. I was ordained March 28th of 1977, and I believe April 14th, I arrived in Edgemont, South Dakota, at St. James. That was my first parish with two missions attached, one at Ulrichs and one at Ardmore, South Dakota. And so I spent the next 10 years there, and then I was reassigned to Winter, South Dakota, as I said, to that Czech community. And I took care of Winter, the parish, the Catholic community there at Immaculate Conception, and then also St. Isidore's, which was at Colombe, South Dakota, so I had a mission attached. From there, I was sent to Phillip, South Dakota, to a Sacred Heart Parish, and then I had two missions there also. I had St. William's at Midland and St. Mary's at Milesville, South Dakota, and I was there, and again, approximately 10 years, and was transferred to Belle Fourche. So I was at St. Paul's parish there, and then I also was assigned to St. Mary's at Newell and St. Joseph's of Mud Butte. So I had two missions there also. And from Belle Fourche, I was reassigned at to Sturgis, to St. Francis of Assisi. And while there, I continued to take care of St. Mary's of Newell. And I spent 12 years in Sturgis. So after that, I began to experience some health issues. And so I was given 1 year a medical leave. And then I was reassigned here to St. Therese the Little Flower a year and a half ago.
Wow, so you've been all over South Dakota. You've been
Well,
bringing polka music.
yeah, I guess they've all know that I play accordion and I like old cars. Every parish that I've been in would know that. The diocese is split into two parts within the state. So from the Missouri River west to the borders is all within the Diocese of Rapid City, and I'm a diocesan priest, so I would stay within this region, this half of the state anyway, from the Missouri River west. And so it just depends on where they choose to send you, and that is where you serve. It works a little differently than maybe other denominations of faith. They usually put out a call and you negotiate or do what you need, and I'm not sure what all that involves, but with us, under obedience, we're sent where they choose to send us and where they feel our talents will be used the best.
You mentioned your cars again too, and the album cover of your new CD is actually you against one of your old cars. Can you tell me a little bit about cars and why you collect cars? What's your favorite car?
Well, I guess out of all the cars that I've enjoyed, I still enjoy the Model A's the most. It's been a. I have four Model A's and they're all 1930s. For those who are older, they'd know what a coupe is versus I got a roadster and a phaeton and then a closed car. So, I developed that when I was young, when I was in grade school yet. I had an uncle that had a Model A pickup, and I just thoroughly enjoyed and was attracted to those old cars. Even though my father didn't think much of it, he always called them junk, and I called them precious metal. So, as I went to from community to community, I also found other people of the same interest, and so I found people that would help me and assist me. I'm not as mechanical as I'd like to hope I would be, but they would help me, and we'd restore these cars from the frame up. We'd start with the frame on four posts and rebuild them so that they were back to the original state and were as good as when Henry put them out of the factory. In fact, I was allowed, my bishop, I had asked him if I could go to Denver with one of them And I did that 2 years in a row and placed first. If I don't mean to brag, but I competed in Denver against cars from Reno, Nevada, and Des Moines, Iowa, and other places which had first place winners. So I showed cars for a short time, but I always compare it to like rodeoing. You invest $150,000 in your equipment, your horse, your trailer, and your pickup, and if you win, you get a buckle. You know, there what. I could see there wasn't a lot of money in showing cars. You could spend a lot of money on that car and your enclosed trailer and that type of thing. And consequently, if you won, you got a trophy. So it really wasn't too lucrative for me to continue. I really couldn't afford to do that or continue doing that. But I did enjoy it the few years I did. I believe that same car in 10 shows took 14 trophies. So there was a satisfaction to that. But I've always just enjoyed them and enjoyed the people that also have a like interest. They were always seemed to be people that were pretty much salt of the earth, down home. A lot of those people that would focus on a Model A, they were a poor man's show car and a poor man's car in their day when they were being built from 1928 to 1931. So, but I do enjoy them as a hobby. You know, they come second. You know, I come from a cattle ranch and I do have a driving buggy, but I never have kept a horse through the years because that's an animal and you have to find hobbies that you can open the door on the garage and work on it. And when your duties as a priest came first, you could shut the door. And if you couldn't get back to it for a month, well, that's okay. It would sit there and wait. It didn't need to be fed or watered or taken care of. So that's maybe another reason why the old cars kind of stuck with me. It was something that when I had the time, I could give attention to it. So
14 trophies, it seems like a lot.
Well, the car did well, but every time we would compete, the judges would give you a score sheet, but they would judge everything separately, like wheels from tires and tires separate from valve stems and hubcaps and interior. But they would give you, there was a total number of points in each section of the judging of the car, but they wouldn't tell you what was wrong. So you'd take it home and then you'd study that score sheet and try and figure out what was that we could get you more points the next show. But like I said, I only did that for probably at the most 4 years where I actually tried to compete in that circle of people. But I did enjoy it, but it just was kind of cost prohibitive.
So your albums, this, I'm not exactly sure, what year did this one come out?
That was last year.
So you've released two albums 2 years in a row.
Yes.
Can you tell me about that? That sounds like quite a bit of work.
Well, my mother hounded me for the last 5 years. She said, for no other reason, for posterity's sake, she said, I'd like you to make a recording. And she said, I'll even pay for it if that's what it takes. And the illness that I was struggling with, or am struggling with, the first year, I had good friends that were in the entertainment business who used a sound studio in Fargo, North Dakota, and so they set me all up to do this recording. The first year, 3 years ago, I didn't feel well enough to go and do it, so we canceled it. Well, my mother was insistent. She said, you know, you got to do this. You got to do this. And so last year, or in 2015, I guess it was in the fall of the year, I wasn't able to drive, so my sister drove me to Fargo, North Dakota. And most bands or people, they take their time in putting one of these CDs out, but I had no aspirations or expectations that it would sell or that there would be, any volume of no copies going out. But we went ahead and in 2 days we time crunched it. I'd start recording at 1 in the afternoon and at 5 we'd quit and that'd be it. And so The first CD that came out had 14 songs on it, and some of them are personal. I wrote some of them. In fact, I have one that's called Alice's Waltz. My sister passed away in 2013, and she loved to waltz. So did my dad. And so I wrote a song for her and put it on there. And the man who played accordion in our little community there, like I said, referred to him earlier, who used to play for dances solo, just all there was an accordion. We put that one in there, song that he always played. And then I wrote a polka of my own. But the rest, I think my mom pretty well picked out, you know, from Crystal Chandelier to Cold, Cold Heart, Hank Williams, and just a lot of old dance pieces. And so that was the first one that came out. And I was invited by these same people who set up the recording for me to play in Las Vegas. And so I opened for six bands in Las Vegas, I guess 4 years ago, and the tape kind of took off. It isn't like we've sold thousands of them by any means. Humbly, I say there's probably 850 of these CDs from that first album out. Well, that spawned a second one. They said, "You did the first one, you got to do another one. You got to do another one." And so this fall, again, I wasn't able to drive real well. So again, my sister offered me very graciously to drive me to Fargo, and we did it the same thing. In 2 days, we time crunched the second album. So that's kind of how that all happened. Yeah, it was just on the basis of posterity's sake, and the demand was there, so we made a second.
So that's so you actually like these got attention in Las Vegas too, not just in South Dakota, you were saying?
Yes. I don't know if it's sometimes I think, you know, honestly, it's not how good you might be, but it's who you know, not what you know. And they're in the entertainment business. They do it professionally, but they also run the Southwest Polka Festival, which is the largest festival west of the Mississippi. So there's about 1,100 or 1,200 people that are there, and they have two ballrooms going with six different polka bands. Well, they decided that they would invite me to come and to open for the each day for the polka festival. So I play about an hour and a half each day before the first band begins, and they've moved me from the hallway of registrations into a ballroom because people danced and got in trouble dancing in the hallway of the hotel because of their insurance liability. So they moved me into a hall to a stage. And so for the last 3 years, I've played on stage and opened for these different polka bands. I do enjoy it, and I play primarily dance music, and they seem to enjoy what I play and the type of music and the rhythm I use, to whereas it's been enjoyable and fun. So for the last, and again in February now, I'll be going to Las Vegas on February 6th, fly down there and play open form 3 days in a row and get back on a plane. It's during the week, so it doesn't mess up the weekend schedule. That's a Tuesday, Wednesday, and a Thursday, and we fly home on a Friday again. So, but I've enjoyed that and got to know a lot of people from, well, from the West Coast as well as the South. Especially, there's big followings of people who love polka music in Arizona. You go down there in the winter months, and there's always a band playing somewhere.
Do you have any plans to like release another album after these two?
At the present time, no. I like I said, it was never, and to make it perfectly clear, I never did plan on even producing the number we have. It's kind of interesting, but you know, I wanted to be legal and valid with these. I didn't plan on making any money on them, but the copyrights, believe it or not, for songs even as old as they might be and as old as they are, from well, Lichtensteiner Polka, it was copyrighted in 1902. The song South, 1924. take these chains with Hank Williams from the 50s, you know. But we pay a copyright for every disc that's pressed. So this one, I think by the time we finished, was just about or real close to $1,600 or $1,700 just in copyright fees, besides your recording time and then to produce the CD. So they also, because they promoted it, also set the price. Like I said, I wasn't out to make money on either one of them. But if I can recoup my initial investment, I'm happy. I'm content with that. So it's not a matter of making money. It's being able to provide music for people who enjoy that type of music, you know. Because you won't find it in the local store that sells CDs more often than not. I have a few private distributors that sell them for me, you know, convenience store in Faith called M&D, which happens to be a relative, and then what is it, Kickstart in Sturgis. There's a gal who I've gotten to know real well. That's a friend of mine, Robin, and she said, "Oh, let me put them in my store." So there's a few of those people that distribute, and then here at St. Therese, the secretaries have them in their office, and the parishioners have been buying them. So. And then they're also sold at Las Vegas. So but it's been fun, and I'm glad I did it. I don't know if I'll make any more. It depends how I feel and how things play out, I guess. No pun intended. But I've enjoyed doing them, and I enjoy music, and I like that type of music. So most of both these CDs, no matter which songs you listen to, they're pretty much dance music, and rather than just easy listening or listening music. The car you see here on the album is a 1930 Model A Ford Coupe, and it was the deluxe model with the cowl lights. I named her Elma after some friends of mine who owned her for 40 years, and it was Elma and Lyle Strackbine from Hot Springs, South Dakota. Lyle loved Model A's, and he actually built my show car for me and his son Doug, and consequently, as years went by, I did the funeral for both Alma and for Lyle, and their son Doug called me one day and said, "Father," he says, "I want you to have that Model A." And so about 4 years ago, he gifted me with this 1930 Model A coupe, I had fond memories of his parents, and so I said, "I'm going to name her Elma after your mother." And so it's a 1930 Model A Ford Coupe, and it's all original, and it's the way it's put together. It doesn't have a beefed-up engine or anything else. It's just a Model A that somebody probably would have drove in the 1930s as a family. In fact, they drove that car for some 40 years. As one of their cars in the family to work and back.
Oh, wow. That's awesome.
So I chose to use it on my cover. So. Okay. I actually burned an accordion up in Dupree, South Dakota, playing for a polka funeral. And the lady had put it in her will that she wanted a polka funeral when she died. And so her children called, and I went to Dupree, South Dakota, to the Catholic Church, and I did a polka funeral. And in the middle of the funeral, they had a brownout. The lights all went dim, and it was an electronic accordion, and consequently it burned up 23 boards in the generator, which is built in Italy. And like modern day technology, unfortunately, the accordion was only less than 15 years old, but the parts for the generator to run it were obsolete. So I had to buy a different accordion.
Oh, how new is this one?
This one here is 12, 13 years old now, but I couldn't afford a new one. This is a used one. The one like it new is about $18,000, and so I bought this used with a guarantee from a Potosa Accordion Company.
That's
They're hand-built, so.
How long do they last?
They'll last, see, they're wind and electronic nowadays. You know, there's the wind instrument, which you hear separately, which you can just hear just the wind. Once we add electronics to it, it comes alive and it becomes a whole different machine. So you've got wind and electronics working at the same time. Test 1, 2. Let's see. You're going to start already. This is the first song on that second CD that was put out called Let's Have a Party. And it's not new by any means. It was written by Jessica McRobinson in 1957 and sung by Wanda Jackson.
It's really upbeat and exciting. Yeah. Is that the way that a lot of these like dance polka songs are?
Yes. Yeah. They're all very much that way. And just to give you a variety or a variation, I didn't put words to it, but I wrote a song for my sister called Alice's Waltz because she loved to waltz. And so I'll play that for you. The one I wrote for my other sister. She's always saying she's the polka. She's the prince of the Prairie Princess Polka.
Thank you. awesome. It was really, really great to interview today. Thank you for giving me the private show in your studio.
Oh, well, I just, it was my pleasure. It really was. Enjoyed your visit and our time together. And I enjoy, like I said, playing. I've been asked booked for dances on occasions, but I don't play dances alone. I've been very blessed and fortunate. I do have a guy that happens to be with another band who's been in Vegas the last 3 years and is going to drum for me again this fourth year. But normally I don't take bookings for dances because due to one thing, my health, and the other part is I'm really not a band. I'm just an individual who plays accordion and enjoys it and hope that people hear it, enjoy it too.
That's fantastic. Thank you.
You're welcome.